Great question. The Manufacturing Podcast offers news and information for the people who make, store, and move things, and those who manage and maintain the facilities where that work gets done.
Thank you for joining us today on the Great Question Podcast, where our discussion today will be on reshoring. And my guest is Rosemary Coates. She's the Executive Director of the Reshoring Institute. I'm Robert Brooks with Foundry Management Technology and American Machinist. Thank you for joining us, Rosemary.
Thank you. I appreciate being here.
Can you give us a handy definition of reshoring?
Handy definition. Reshoring is kind of an interesting, broader term than you would think. It includes not only bringing manufacturing back to the U.S. that had once gone overseas, but it also includes expanding manufacturing domestically, as well as foreign direct investment. So it's got a broad umbrella and really speaks to just generally expanding U.S. manufacturing.
Okay, so for the readers and listeners that I'm most familiar with, that's very important. And can you tell us what is the progress report for reshoring as of now in 2024?
Yeah, it's pretty positive. I'll tell you, the Reshoring Institute was established in 2014, so we've been around for 10 years. And we've seen sort of slow growth over that period of time until the pandemic. And once the pandemic hit, people recognized these long global supply chains were very vulnerable, and every link in the supply chain had risk to it. And as a result of that, so many companies across industries, not just in automotive or, you know, the places where we are familiar with semiconductors and so forth, but really across, broadly across all industries, are rethinking their global supply chains and bringing sourcing back to the U.S. or reshoring or nearshoring their production capability.
Now, I'm going to come back to you about nearshoring then, but is shortening the supply chain the primary factor for these organizations?
Partially. So I would say the primary reason is de-risking the global supply chains. So as I mentioned, every time you have a link in the chain, you've got risk. You take on risk, whether it's a risk at the factory or it's risk in logistics or it's risk associated with higher tariff rates. Those are all specific risks. But then I would say the other very important component to this is that on nearly everyone's agenda is sustainability and global warming. And when you reshore or you bring production closer to home, closer to your markets, I would say, you reduce your carbon footprint because there isn't so much transportation and so forth. So it goes very hand in hand with reshoring and sustainability are very closely matched. And I think as a result, we see a lot of companies paying more attention than they were in the past. You had asked earlier about growth. Also, as I mentioned, it went fairly slowly and then took a big spike after the pandemic. It's really hard to attach numbers to it, almost impossible. And that's because when you include companies that decide never to go overseas, or they're not going to pursue their previous attempt to move a factory or do sourcing overseas, that's part of what we would calculate as reshoring. And so so you can't, it's not reported anywhere, for example, and it doesn't necessarily be included in the numbers. So I think the numbers are actually pretty high. We see a net increase in jobs growth. But to put an actual number on it or a number of jobs, impossible to do.
But I'm sure that there are success stories. Can you describe perhaps a success story that will help our listeners grasp the effects here?
Yeah, I think that's really important to point to those successes. We worked with a company called WaterLogic for over a year. They make the water filtration equipment, like when you fill up your water bottle at the airport, in that filtration equipment, or in the gym, or in the break room. And they are a UK-based company and were manufacturing in this fantastic modern factory in Qingdao, China, and were importing into the US. And the US was a growth market for them. So they really wanted to establish manufacturing here. And we worked with them for over a year. And eventually, they decided on a factory, and we helped them with the sourcing and the layout and so forth, near the Dallas-Fort Worth airport. So they were very successful. They put about 300 people to work at a new factory in near DFW, and are going gangbusters selling in the U.S. now, and also to the U.S. government, because they now have U.S. content that's included in manufacturing those products. So that's one really great story, great success story. Another one that I often point to is GE. So under Jack Welch, General Electric pretty much moved all its production offshore, and that's how he was able to achieve such great financial results. But when Jeff Immelt took over, he challenged the engineers to try to find a product that they could actually manufacture in the U.S. And so they worked on a product called a GeoSpring water heater. And it is a high-end water heater that produces water on demand, hot water on demand. And they started manufacturing that in the U.S. They negotiated with the unions. They had a low cost. They re-engineered their production lines. They had low cost production. And they were very successful in doing that. So successful, they started bringing other products back for manufacturing here and reopened the GE Appliance Park in Louisville, Kentucky, and eventually put 4,000 people back to work. That's a really great success story also.
Yeah, that is a great story. And I'm sure a lot of our listeners are familiar with that operation in Louisville. Let's come to the discussion of nearshoring. That's come into the headlines to some degree lately relating to electric vehicle production. So what can you tell us about the phenomenon of nearshoring to Mexico?
Yeah, so the Reshoring Institute is in the process of conducting a major research study on cross-border commerce. And I'll tell you, since the 301 penalty tariffs were placed on Chinese imports, so many of our clients have been interested in moving production to Mexico. And I think that's a phenomena that we're going to see continue to grow. There is a tremendous growth in cross-border commerce. Now, of course, immigration gets all the press, but I think the bigger story is really all about commerce. For example, we were down in Laredo a couple of months ago to observe and to talk to the economic development people down there about the cross-border commerce around the Laredo area. Laredo is the largest U.S. land import in the U.S. It's largest by far. And even though Laredo is a little town, the cross-border commerce is phenomenal. They process 14,000 trucks per day. And I had asked two or three times about if that was really true, that it was per day. And they said, yes, per day. The growth in commerce in the Laredo area is over 200% since last year. So what we're seeing is the phenomena of this cross-border commerce really growing and very interesting to many companies who previously were sourcing in China are now sourcing in Mexico.
Interesting. Does the Reshoring Institute have any sense of particular industries that are especially affected by this phenomenon? Or you mentioned Laredo, so, you know, obviously that's a region that's particularly affected. Where should we look on our own for developments in this phenomenon?
Well, I think along cross-border commerce, the biggest growth is in automotive. So there are a lot of automotive parts that are crossing the border. But in terms of reshoring, I would say it's pretty much across industries. We see some highlights in plastics. So making a mold for plastics is very expensive, and often that's done overseas, lots of times in China. But the actual production of the plastic parts has moved back to the U.S., and that's because the market demands very fast delivery. So, you know, we've all been taught by Amazon to expect stuff on our doorstep tomorrow morning, and that translates also into industrial purchases. And so customers are demanding very fast deliveries, and as a result, plastics has come back. Obviously, manufacturing of semiconductors, bolstered by the Chips and Sciences Act, that has taken off like crazy. There are new semiconductor plants being built in Arizona and Idaho and New Mexico and Texas and Ohio and New York, all over the place. And I think within the next 5 to 10 years, we're going to see most of the demand for semiconductors being fulfilled by U.S. manufacturing.
And that will lead to one industry after another achieving their reshoring goals by falling into those new supply chains is the contention there. Yeah, very good.
That's exactly correct. Yes.
Very interesting. Well, Rosemary, this has been very illuminating to me, I'm sure to our listeners too. I expect that as time goes on, we will discuss this subject again, because it seems like there's going to be future developments that everyone will need to understand very well. I hope you'll be available then too. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.